Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host. She's had her new MacBook Pro for 5 weeks but still hasn't used it, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you create unpredictable workshop experiences that predictably work. Now, on last week's show, there was a bit of banter, a bit of riffing between Yuri Shilders and I on, we're just reflecting on our VP 1.0. What's that? It's called Virtually Possible. It's an online program that we created using the FIRE. Oh, no, we didn't fire straight away, but it's, well, kind of. We were ready, then we fired, and then we aimed. And we talk about the process of building as you go, collaborating with someone that you've never met before, and what we'd do differently in Virtually Possible 2.0. So if you're keen on VP 2.0, if you want to find out more, head on over to join.virtuallypossible.co. We're running another live group. This is probably the only one we'll run now between now and the end of the year. It's really about transforming your virtual facilitation game, getting you more confident, whether that's confident on camera, confident in your design, and we build an amazing community around it. So we'd love to see you there. Head on over to join.virtuallypossible.co. Now today, we're switching gears a little bit, but we're talking about life stuff, so it'll be relevant for you. We're talking about careers, performance reviews. Okay, that sounds a bit worky so far. Don't worry. We do delve into things like sleep, dealing with stress, how to switch off at the end of a day, clarifying your vision. And actually, that's why I've recruited my new business coach, who, if you are a long time listener to the show, you would have heard this interview. Alan Weiss is my new business coach, the Million Dollar Consultant. So after I record this intro, I've got to do some homework slash prep work for our coaching session tomorrow morning. But we're talking about that. Where do I want to go? Where do I want to take the podcast? Where do I want to take my career, my business? I'm answering some questions that Alan gave me last week that I just couldn't answer very quickly. So I've done a bit of work over the week. Anyway, not about me. This show is not about me. It's about you, actually. And I hope you get a lot of value out of this one. I'm sure you will. My guest this week is Warren James from Rapid Mentoring. Warren is also based in Brisbane. We met a few years ago, I believe, through our mutual friend, Sean Lavin, who has also been on the show. Warren and I chatted on LinkedIn, and then when I left corporate, we got to know each other a bit better and talked all through sort of sharing ideas for LinkedIn content and building business. Warren is a Brisbane-based coach and mentor who provides online mentoring, coaching, and training to some of Australia's most talented graduates and employees early on in their careers. And he can do that because he has done it. He developed his career from the ground up. You'll hear the story. And he's worked with some of the most respected businesses in the industry, including the BG Group, QGC, Alinta, and Arrow Energy. As an engineer and later a project manager, he has faced and overcome challenges that many project managers face. He has managed projects in excess of $50 million and has worked on overcoming competing deadlines, as well as adversity time and time again. So it's really cool. Like, that's why I was asking him a lot about how he handles that, all of that pressure. Today, as a founder of Rapid Mentoring, he partners with businesses across Australia who are genuinely interested in the development of their staff. And what's most exciting is that Warren is releasing his first book this week as we release this episode. So we'll pop a link to that in the show notes. And it's called Further Faster, The Ultimate Guide to Accelerating Your Career. And he's had some pretty awesome names featured on this that have endorsed it. Jordan Harbinger, who was on show 100, calls it a must-read career guide for anyone wanting to thrive in the profession they love. And Nir Ayol, we had him on the show. We talked about being indistractable, a very popular episode. And he also endorsed it. Further Faster is an actionable guide full of important steps for those who want to make the most out of their career. So if you are feeling a little bit stuck in work or in life, it's all connected, right? Definitely recommend this as a read, as a great place to start. And if you love this conversation and want to know more, reach out to Warren. He's very active on LinkedIn. I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. Check out his book. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, which you can find over at firsttimefacilitator.com/episode141. So on the show notes page, you'll find a link to the Virtually Possible 2.0 waitlist, link to Warren's book, a bit about him, his links, And as well, gosh, more links, right? A link to our free Facebook group called The Flip Chart. We just cracked over 1,000 members from facilitators from all over the world sharing their questions, their wins, their challenges in there. You'll absolutely love it. Okay, that's enough for me. Now onto the show.
I'm so excited to welcome onto the First Time Facilitator podcast my good friend, Warren James. Warren, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me, Leanne. It's an honor to be here. So yeah, thank you.
Cool. It's fun because we always like catch up for coffees and now basically we're just recording a conversation we'd have anyway. You've got some really exciting news. But first of all, I'd love to start. I know you, but our listeners don't know you. Can you please share a bit about your pivots, watershed moments in your career that brought you to doing what you're doing today?
Yeah, sure. I started off my career as an engineer. So quickly moved into project management and started managing bigger and bigger projects, bigger and bigger teams. And at the end of one of those quite big projects, it was a $50-odd million project, had about 150 staff reporting to me. I just completely burnt myself out. I was working 10 days straight, big 12, 13 hour days. And yeah, just got to the end of the project and I was just wrecked. I had to take about 4 months off after that one. So there was quite a lot of reflection after that. I knew that I didn't necessarily want to go back into that fly in, fly out, project management sort of world. So, it took a bit of time to, figure out where to next. And, one of the pieces that I really enjoyed throughout my career was, mentoring the younger members of my team and, just helping them with general career and life sort of stuff. It was never really the technical issues that they needed, but yeah, so over the years, just sort of started to gather a bit of a following and kind of figured, hey, I quite enjoy it. So let's try and build a business out of it.
That's awesome. And it is kind of funny. You talk about a lot of people would come to you. It was the technical staff was okay, but it was more about those life skills. How did you develop your own life skills and your approach to learning and growth?
Some of it I did fairly well from the start, like, being, flat broke when you finish university and having to manage your money and, always being quite cautious and careful about money was, one thing that I've just always sort of had. It's, just being eager to earn more and more money and to save that money and to, we paid off our house quite early on and, started investing and, it got to the point where around like 35 years old, I was able to, walk away from that corporate sort of career. So, definitely a lot of life lessons there. Then there's a whole heap of other things that I did poorly that I had to, learn the hard way and didn't listen to the advice that I was given. And, so it's all part of it. Yeah.
It is all part of it. I'm glad you talk about money as well, because a lot of the time when we talk about skills and in professional and personal development, we kind of skirt around the issue. We talk about communication is really important, leading up is really important, like all of this stuff that's good to have. But at the end of the day, when you think about it, our careers are really driven by the fact that, oh, we get paid at the end of it. And so we want to optimize for that.
100%.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you were stressed and burnt out and you were on the sort of at the end of that project, you took 4 months off. What was going through your mind when you were in the middle of that, feeling that sort of overwhelm? You must have been exhausted. How are you feeling when you wake up every morning when your alarm went off that morning?
Yeah, it's pretty tough. Like I remember like we just energized a big piece of equipment. And so it was like the day after and we all went up to the tavern to, to celebrate. And I could hardly hold up a can of beer to drink. It was just my hands were shaking so bad. So, I just sort of sat there with my arms crossed, tried to pretend that everything was cool. But the 4 months off, it was a lot of time with the family and, spending time with the kids and, getting back into the routine of that. Yeah, catching up on sleep and all those, essential sort of things. And yeah, just not having the right sort of, not being in the right headspace to really go back to work and, just to be able to, it just takes time to build up that resilience again so that you can, start to take on stress again. It's amazing how, you'd go from when you are burnt out, you go from being like absolutely unstressed, nothing's wrong, the slightest little thing, and it would just, tip you off and you're just like full on max out stressed. And yeah, it's that resilience that, allows it to build it up slowly. It's, just taking that time. And I guess, to be thankful that we had saved our money and that we're in a position where I could take that time off and, not need to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. So,
yeah, it's really important having that sort of stock take just so you can make decisions like that. I think that is ultimate freedom. I mean, they always say, money can't buy you happiness, but it gave you that choice of saying, I can't do this. I need to support my family, but I don't need to put myself under this pressure.
100%.
Yeah. Is there anything that we can do if you're caught in the middle of it, like if reflecting on this experience, if you could give yourself advice? I mean, you said you were given advice by other people. What could you have done to mitigate it? I mean, this is the reality of a project, right? It's tough deadlines, pressure from clients.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just, you know, actually being like to having that self-awareness of how stressed you actually are. And then to be able to say, okay, yep, I'm sitting at a 9 out of 10. What can I do to reduce those stress levels by a couple of percentage points? And it's not necessarily taking on more stuff. Like, you know, people say, oh, you know, go into a yoga course or do this and, you know, go to the gym and do extra stuff. It's actually a lot about actually doing less and paring back, saying no more often. When people come to you and say, oh, can you do this as well? And it's like, no, I can't do any extra at this point in time. So, you know, standing up for yourself and that self-awareness of how stressed you are and, you know, but having those tools in your back pocket that, you know, I know that these are the things that I can do to help my personal stress levels. And, you know, for each individual, they'll be different. Mm. Like you love your running and that's a great release for you. But on the flip side, I know that if I go for a run, it's going to hurt me more. So I'm just not a runner. I can go for a push bike ride or something instead. But if you try and, you know, take the advice of the wrong people, it can be really detrimental as well when you start taking on, you know, even more stressed.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast with Pat Flynn this morning and he talked about the acronym FOO. Also, was it JOO? The joy of opting out. The joy of opting out. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's good because I'm talking about productivity and things like that. JOMO was another one.
Joy of missing out. The joy of missing out. No, it's really cool. So, and, you know, it's daunting at first to, you know, to be able to say no. And, you know, there's some good techniques on how you can actually go about saying no. You know, don't leave it. It doesn't get better with time. If you can let somebody know that you can't help and you let them know straight up, you know, sorry, but my plate's absolutely full. And that gives them time to go and find somebody else to help them. So
that advice is coming directly at me. I've got these inquiries sitting in my inbox and I'm like, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to make all of them work in my already stacked up calendar. So that's good. It's probably just get that out of my own, because it is actually sucking up my energy because I'm in between my meetings. I'm like, how am I going to respond to that client and let them know?
Yeah. And look, a lot about stress is that you don't feel that you've got enough resources or enough time to get something done. And if you don't have the resources or enough time, you know, you can either ask for more resources or you can ask for more time. It's pretty simple. So, you know, you can ask somebody else to help you with it, or you can palm it back and say, I don't have time to do it. If you could give me more time, I might be able to, you know, add it to the end of the to-do list. But at this point, that's where it's at.
There's a real sort of fear about that comes around with that, because you feel like, well, especially if you value things like delivering to people and particularly as solopreneurs, yeah. Warren, you probably feel this as well. Like there's a bit of a scarcity mindset, like that inquiry is going to be your last one. So you've got to go with it, even though you can see logically that you're all, I mean, I'm actually just talking from my personal experience. I get these inquiries. I want to do all of them because I'm like, well, when's the next one going to come through? Does that play out in your solopreneur career? And
yeah, and totally. But yeah. You know, at the same time, it's so much more professional to let people down early. Well, you know, to tell them no early rather than letting them down later down the track. So it's absolutely my 2 cents worth.
Yeah, love it, love it. Now, Warren, we're talking about doing additional things and you've done something pretty amazing in the last 18 months. You've written a book.
Yes, it's kind of crazy, but yeah, Further Faster, The Ultimate Guide to Accelerating Your Career. It's out. It's got, you know, stacks of books sitting around the house now and we're ready to go. It's been an absolute roller coaster, to be honest. I don't really think that I fully knew what I was getting myself into. It was like, you know, it was like, you just, oh yeah, no, it'd be good to write a book. And, you know, you hear all the stories about how it's, you know, it's really good for your personal brand and helps to make you a, you know, a key person of influence within your industry. And yeah, and I guess I sort of started, you know, pulling things together about 18 months ago, just the initial vision of what it would look like. And it's taken a lot of effort. By far the worst bit would have to be the feedback. Yeah, just you go through that sort of feedback cycle and then you have the whole imposter syndrome that comes along with it. And it's like, oh, you know, who am I to write a book? You know, my writing's terrible. And not that my writing's terrible. It's more that it just wasn't quite up to the standard of what you would expect for a book. But that's, you know, what the whole editing sort of process is all about. So, you know, you get some feedback from some people and that's like, it's too long. And then other people are like, oh, it's too short. And what do you mean it's too short? Oh, I really wanted to hear more about this or that, and I really enjoyed those parts. So it's quite a big lesson in giving and receiving feedback. It's always nice if there's a bit of purpose to the feedback. If people know why you're asking for the feedback and they can tone their feedback around, you know, what your purpose is, with my purpose was to get to the point of having a published book, they can really tailor in their feedback to get help in that process.
Yeah. Maybe that's your next book, How to Receive Feedback. Let's not talk about the second one. But the reason I want to talk about the process is we've got a lot of listeners that have expertise. They've got brilliance. They share it in workshops. It's not a problem. Like, we've got no problem designing this, creating activities, bringing around great conversation. And the second we have to sort of sit down and think about even mapping a book, we all know, I mean, like you said, Warren, we know it's important for brand building and, you know, really separating from the market. Yeah, like if you listen to maybe episodes, like 100 episodes ago, I'm probably still saying like, yeah, I'd love to write a book to some of my featured guests. I'm still in that stage of like, I'd love to write one. What took you from having that thought to then actually, like, what was the first step that you took to get you in this?
I really can't really put a finger on it. I had a lot of content there, you know, from writing blogs and from our online, you know, courses and stuff like that. And I guess I knew that I had a lot of value that I could add through a book. So yeah, it just sort of naturally just sort of, it got to the point where I just felt I had enough content, and I came up with a basic sort of structure of how I, at a very high level, and then just broke those levels down and down and down. And I completely stuffed up some parts of it. Like the flow of the book just wasn't there from the start, and I had to just rearrange and reshuffle and then, you know, reintroduce sections and all that sort of stuff, which there's a lot of things I would do differently next time. But you know, it's taken a lot of effort. It is a massive undertaking, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, the research and the just the writing and the editing. Be prepared to read your own book at least 50 times. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's right. So one thing you'd do is probably maybe, is that what you're alluding to? You'd probably get the sequencing right before you started writing, like really getting into the details. Is that what you mean by getting the flow right?
Correct, yes. Yeah. So you have that overarching view of, I guess what I would call it is you're taking the reader through a journey through the whole book. And with my book, I've broken that down into three parts, and it's learning all about yourself and where you want to go. And then, you know, here's the tools that you're going to need for that journey. And then here's, you know, the last section is all about how to accelerate that journey. So to getting it into that, you know, quite a good flow where you're not getting to the end of the book and there's a bit there that should have been at the start and those sorts of things. So it's
kind of like editing I'm just thinking of like iMovie when I use it to edit like videos together. I have an idea. And so you're lucky when you're in a tech tool like that, because you literally just pick up a piece and move it. It takes half a second. But I can imagine in a book, like you said, then you've got to add in that intro sentence, and it's not as easy as like a cut and paste job.
Yeah. And just all the little things like the, you know, the acronyms and stuff that you use throughout your book that, you know, you have to introduce it as the full word first and then go into the acronyms, and it just gets so confusing. And
that level of detail. I still want to write one. What episode? 139. So hopefully by 200, there's a book. Now, Warren, what I love about what you talk about, it's funny, you talk about accelerating your career, but it's not just about building your career. You talk about four pillars: personal life, career goals, bucket list, and finances. Can you share why four pillars are so important when it comes to accelerating your career?
So for me, it's the whole life and career sort of thing. They go hand in hand. It's there's no one without the other. Like, you can't have an amazing career without having your personal life in balance. So with the four pillars, there's a real interdependence between them that they play on each other. If you've got your finances in order, chances are that your career is going to be going well. And if finances are in order, you're going to be able to tick off your bucket list items and, you know, go on those overseas travel and the trips and, you know, have the experiences that you want to have. But that's going to help you refresh and reduce your stress levels and all those sort of bits and pieces. That so, you know, your personal life's going to be doing really well if all those sort of pieces are in place. And when you can go back to work refreshed and ready to go again and motivated to make more money, that's where the upward acceleration really kicks in. So
What's the secret of getting, I kind of, there's a, Jonathan Fields, he wrote a book called How to Live a Good Life, and he has three different buckets, I think connection, vitality, and contribution. So work,
yes.
I'm kind of like that at the moment. I'm like stopping myself every day or week and going, okay, which one do I need to top up now? And then, all right, relationships. Then like, all right, Chris, let's go out to dinner. And then it'll be, okay, I actually need to put more in. So I agree with you. I think it's totally interlinked. Please, if you're listening, don't take my strategy in terms of like just topping up like just in time, because it can drive you crazy.
Yeah.
Particularly when I think about your life working as a project manager and then balancing relationships, like there's only a certain amount of time in the day. Like, and then Warren, I know you love your finances. It's probably the weakest part of my business is managing that. I've got a good accountant. She keeps me honest. I'm still like, don't like getting into Excel spreadsheets and crunching the numbers. Even though business, that's the most important thing. It's not a hobby. It's a business.
Yeah.
Yep. How do we create that balance? It's a lifelong question.
A big part of what I'm trying to help with the book. So after we go through the four pillars, we actually get into the sticky note planner, which really helps the people to actually plan that little bit further ahead and create a vision of what they're striving for. So, you know, when you start looking a little bit further ahead, you're not just like looking at your toes the whole time and like constantly sitting there trying to top up that bucket, then that one. Yes. It's like, you know, in the depths of, you know, a really, really bad project, I knew what I was striving for 5 or 10 years down the track.
Amazing.
And it's like, I always had a goal that I wanted to, you know, retire by the age of, but be in a position where I could retire at 40. And that was just something that I kept striving for. So that kept pushing me to put up with the crappy job, you know, to keep making more money, to, you know, keep striving further and, you know, just to keep pushing for those sorts of things. So that's got to be my biggest takeaway is, you know, just have mm-hmm. that longer term goal. What do you want this to look like when it's finished? What are you actually striving for? And having that, the bigger vision, you know, that you can see it, that you can smell it, you can taste it.
Yeah. Good point. I mean, because if you were to ask me right now, like, what is my 5-year vision? I probably couldn't answer it. So I've read your book, but I'm going to have to get into the detail and get sort of that plan happening. Because like you said, having that long-term vision and like in your face and a reminder every day can help you get through those times. And yeah, and also I think create some good criteria on the opportunities that you do accept versus decline. It makes saying no a lot easier, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, you know, if it doesn't fit into, you know, what you want for your business, it's easier to say no. So that's a big part of it. I think it helps to build a lot of resilience as well, that it's amazing how much you can, you know, go through if you have that vision of what you're trying to achieve. If you're just, you know, sitting there bobbing along and not really sure why you're doing it, and it's quite easy to get, you know, knocked off course.
Demotivated big time.
Yes.
Now, one thing I love that you address as well is sleep. And that's the thing. It's like when you're stressed, you need a lot of sleep then to so that you have the energy to deal with the next day and build that resilience. But oftentimes when you're stressed, it's not like you switch off your laptop and everything is bliss and you've forgotten all about the work day and you have the most amazing sleep. Often you find that whatever.
It's the complete opposite. Yeah.
Complete opposite.
Yeah. So for me, being an engineer, I'm a problem solver. That's what I do. And for a lot of years, it was like, you know, I'd go to bed, I'd lie down, your head hits the pillow and it's like, oh, it's quiet, it's peaceful. I can now process everything that's in my head and you start going through this whole trying to solve all the problems of the day or the problems that you need to solve for tomorrow and all those sorts of things. So yeah, so switching off is a massive thing. So even just being present when you switch your computer off at the end of the day, just, you know, if you have a little a post-it note on the power button and it's just, you know, think to yourself, okay, I am turning off the computer. I am finished work for the day. And, you know, if you have a little routine that you go through that, okay, I'm finished, I'm done, the computer's off, especially with working from home, there's, you know, countless times that you go, oh, I need to just duck into the study, make sure I turned off the computer. Don't know if you did it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, you might sit there and, I don't know, do a quick meditation. You might go for a run or go for a walk just to create a break between, you know, who you were at work and who you want to be at home. And then inside the house or when you put the key inside the lock just to, you know, to walk inside, it's, you know, who do I want to be when I step into this house? You might switch from being on track with work to, okay, I want to be a loving parent or want to go and have a cuddle with the dogs or, you know, whatever it might be. But, you know, just to ask yourself that, you know, it's quite a deep sort of question, but it really helps, you know, if you can just get into the habit of doing that every day. Just when you finish work, it's like, okay, who do I want to be now? And you can ask yourself that through the day as well. Like, you know, before you step into a meeting, if you're a bit worried about it, you know, who do I want to be when I'm in this meeting or in this performance review? And, you know, you can put yourself in the right frame of mind and have that right mindset when you walk into things. It makes a massive difference.
Yeah, bringing in some intentionality. It is funny you mentioned that this morning on a dog walk. We wake up pretty early and I was just thinking about the meetings I had in my calendar. Not this one, because I was, of course, looking forward to chatting to you, Warren. I wasn't stressed about this, but I was like, I've got these meetings and I've got these ones coming up. And I was on this dog walk and Chris is there and I'm just going through, like, and I'm like, Leanne, be present. But I was good for maybe a minute or two, then it would just keep going back to that. So I like that you said it's a habit. I think a lot of the time when we try new things, and particularly about being present, and I'm doing 10-minute meditations, I'm starting it all, just going to be kind to ourselves, knowing that it is easy to slip back and that it's just, I don't know, a journey, I guess.
Yeah. And the, like Nir Eyal's, the time boxing as well. I found that to be really, really helpful with that.
Can you share,
like,
that with our listeners? What do you write?
So it's basically just blocking out your entire calendar for the day. And if you're going for a walk with the dogs and you know it's going to take an hour, you put an hour in your calendar just to say, this time is allocated to walking the dog. You basically can then, like, release all that anxiety of having to think about what am I doing for the rest of the day, all those meetings, all the rest of it, because this time is allocated to walking the dog. And, you know, it might be later in the day and this time is allocated to putting the kids to bed. I don't need to be anxious about catching up on that work because I've got another block of time later in the day that's allocated to just that one thing. So from a productivity sort of perspective, just doing one thing at a time, just allowing yourself just to focus on that. And, you know, another thing we cover in the book is getting into flow states and eliminating distractions and all those sorts of things. So it really does help you to, you know, maximize your concentration, you know, maximize your productivity. You get through things quicker. You burn a lot less energy because you're not multitasking and trying to do all these different things at once. And I love the time boxing. It's,
yeah, it is. It's really good, particularly when you have, yeah, you put everything that you're going to do in there. Because a lot of us, we keep our calendars just for the professional events, like the meetings, but you're like, okay, cook dinner here and this and walk and catch up on that podcast and all that sort of stuff. And it does put your mind at ease. That's something I'll have to bring back. So thank you again for the prompt. That's awesome. And it's great that Nir, he's mentioned, he sort of gave you a plug for the book. Congrats.
Yeah, that was awesome. Again, it was just one of those, I think it's, you know, pushing yourself out of your comfort zone to a certain extent, but I've been connected with Nir for, you know, quite a while now. And it was just, you know, send him a message and say, hey, I've written a book and I'd love you to check it out. And, you know, if you like it, to, you know, give us a bit of a blurb that we could put on the back cover. And he, you know, he said, yeah, that he'd love to check it out. And it was probably about 3 weeks later, he sent a response back and was like, hey, really enjoyed it. Really practical, good advice. How does this sound to go on the back cover? And I was like,
oh my gosh,
that's brilliant.
So, yeah, cool. So he's amazing. Yeah. He was on the show. I don't know. I think it was an episode in the '90s, but,
Yeah,
he's awesome. Now, talking about getting out of your comfort zone, something that we have to do if you work internally is every year you've got an annual performance review. And yes. I remember my old company, I was a person that had to lead that, like lead the process. And I remember when it was my time to go with my manager, that apprehension that you feel. And it's funny because, like, I lead the process. I train people on how to have these conversations. Yet we all feel it. Like, our status is being judged, right, in this 1 hour performance meeting. Now, you got some cool strategies. Tell the story. Like, you've gotten some good results out of your annual performance review.
Look, I've had both ends of the spectrum. So early on in my career, I really didn't do well. There was one point in time, like, and I was running a project and I was flat out and, you know, stepped into the boss's office and, okay, performance review. And I literally said, look, I haven't had time to prepare for this. Can we wing it? And he was just like, no, get out, come back on Monday, spend some time on the weekend preparing for it, and basically don't waste my time again. And even after preparing to that one, I didn't do overly well because I didn't sell myself. And it was a couple of years later, you know, I learned from that lesson, and I'd been in a new company for, I think I'd been there for 12 months, and I'd taken on a bit more responsibility during that time and, you know, got the new title and all the rest of it. And it was like already earning, you know, amazing sort of money. And, you know, my boss helped me a lot. He really stepped in to help with the process. And we spent a lot of time, you know, going through the KPIs and, you know, going through the next level and how was I achieving acting above my pay grade and all those sorts of things. And spent quite a bit of time doing that one. And then my boss took me outside and he's like, you just got one of the highest pay rises on the entire project. And HR's given you a 34% pay rise. So, that just blew me away. And I just realized that it was something that, yeah, nobody gets taught how to do it. And they could really use the help to go in there and just, it's not about overselling yourself and getting something that you don't deserve. It's, you know, it's all about just being practical and just like, these are my KPIs. This is how I've reached them. This is how I've, you know, completed them. Here's some, you know, evidence-based examples of how I've actually done it. This is when it happened, where it happened. There might be a photo that goes along with it. Or if one of your KPIs was to complete a particular training course, print out the certificate and take it along with you. It doesn't take much, but just to walk into a performance review and have a, you know, a stack or a little file that's, you know, ready to go makes it look like you're prepared. So yeah, performance reviews, prepare. Make sure that you've met and exceeded all your KPIs. You know, one of the other things is just to keep a diary throughout the year of, you know, all the times that you've gone above and beyond, or, you know, you've got an award, or, you know, all those little things that after 9 or 10 months, you sort of seem to forget about them, but it's always good just to bring them up again.
Yeah, I definitely suggest that. And one thing I'd also suggest that I did that was helpful was just have like in your inbox, have a folder, like nice things or something, you know, for the performance review. You just cut and paste.
Accolations.
Totally. Yep. Yeah. And then at the end of the year, I like the idea of printing out the certificate, like bringing something tangible. Reminds me of, I think it was Ramit Sethi or someone was talking about the briefcase test, and you go to an interview and you have a briefcase, there's nothing in it, but it just shows that you've, you know, people have this impression that you've prepared something beforehand and they get elevated. It's fascinating.
Yeah. In the book, there's a whole section on your performance reviews. And I just think that they're critically important. And you know, that's the sort of stuff that goes on your file and your record with HR, and just spend that little bit of effort. And if you spent 2 hours preparing and it got you an extra like $500 pay rise, you know, that's $250 an hour. And you're probably doing it on work time anyway. So
yeah, good point.
Time well spent, in my opinion. And, you know, it can really help you, you know, if you just take that next step up the you know, the corporate ladder a year earlier, and then instead of the next step being over 4 years, it's 3 years. You know, you can really go a lot further in your career, you know, just by taking that little bit of extra effort. And you know, let's face it, there's not many people that really do put a lot of effort into their performance review. So it doesn't take much to stand out from the crowd.
Love that. And the market is really interesting at the moment with COVID, right? And people are doing virtual job interviews. People are starting jobs with their teams who've never met them in person. They're just dialing into these calls. What advice do you have for people that are just wanting to accelerate their career right now during COVID? Are there any other things that we can do to accelerate and grow, given the fact that we don't have...
It's tough. You know, working on your own personal resilience and, you know, just keep going with the professional development and, you know, anything that you can to keep adding more value to your organization. Every organization is different, but every company makes money somehow. And once you can figure out, you know, what the metrics are of how they make money and, you know, how your job fits into the cogs of those particular companies, you know, if you're an accountant or something and it's your time gets billed out a particular billable hour, you can either charge more or bill more hours, and just trying to keep more value going into the business it's how you keep, you know, pushing yourself ahead and putting your hand up for, you know, the higher duties and helping out, or, you know, backfilling for a manager if they're taking time off, or, you know, those sorts of things that they can really get noticed. And, you know, even during these times, you know, preparing for your performance review, it sounds simple, but it goes a long way and it really does help to push you along.
Yeah. And even also that whole process of preparing for a performance review, it's not only good for the actual performance review, but also for you to actually remember, oh, wow, I have done all these things. You talked about an imposter syndrome earlier, but you're stacking up all your credentials, which again, we kind of do things, we dismiss it and like, what's the next goal? Rather than going, oh, wow, I've actually achieved all these things. And that's, again, is a message to myself. This has been great. Well, I was going to ask you a follow-up question, but just on adding value. I remember when I back at my old company, Teas, I remember one week I was doing all this work and none of it was related to my job description. All of it was really fun stuff, running workshops, the stuff, you know, and it just shows you that you can sculpt and mold and put your hand up for areas where you think you might be able to add value. So anyone that's listening, I think we might be more stacked to support staff in organizations that are listening in and thinking, oh, how do I add value? But it's just seeing the opportunities. And if you are listening to this podcast, facilitation is like the ultimate. The fact that you can run meetings, it's just a really great skill set to have, something definitely to pipe up about in your performance review. Now you're actually running your own business though. You've transitioned. So you're no longer accelerating your career, you're accelerating business. How have you found that shift to working internally to now running your own show?
I love it. Yeah. It's to be able to, you know, take it at your own pace. And but you know, through the whole engineering and project management sort of side of things, you don't really help people all that much. So, you know, that was a big crux for me, you know, being able to provide advice to people and have them come back a week later and go, oh yeah, hey, that really helped, and or I'm sleeping better, or you know, to actually, you know, have a positive impact on people's lives, is it's hugely, hugely rewarding.
It's the best. I agree. And you can sort of, like you said, you make choices to where it ends up moving to.
Yeah.
Because you do have that financial leg and you talk about it, what would be your advice for someone that's wanting to like leave their job and go all in to running their business? What would be your practical financial hat? What would you say to them?
To probably just to develop it as much as you can whilst you're working, you know, save up that, you know, a nest egg of, you know, probably 6 or 12 months of living expenses. It is expensive to start a business. There's all the little hidden costs that you don't really factor in when you start, but also to have, you know, a really clear vision of what you want the business to become, you know, in 5 or 10 years time when it hits its peak, what do you want it to look like? And then to, you know, sort of work backwards from there to really, you know, sit on, you know, what can you work on now whilst you're still working? You know, you might be able to put out a blog or, you know, just a few little things that you can sort of start to get the ball rolling. You know, even over the next 12 months, you could just be connecting with the right people on LinkedIn while you're working, you know, building that network, having it ready to go that when you do take the plunge, you've got a great big, you know, network sort of sitting behind you, ready to help you. There's quite a lot of things that you can do before you pull the pin that, you know, it's really, really pivotal in how successful you'll be when you do kick it off.
Yeah, definitely. That's exactly what I did. I started this podcast maybe a year and a bit out of leaving. I always had the vision of wanting to run my own show, but gave myself, mine was a pretty long runway. I'm glad that I had that. I didn't just jump off.
Oh, yeah. And like if you were, you know, if you just jumped off and then kicked off a podcast and, you know, 6 months later and you're getting 3 or 4 people listening to each podcast episode, you'd probably give up pretty quickly. So. Yeah. You know, having that long-term vision in mind of what you're chasing for, try and build as much momentum as you can before you take the plunge. And if you can be making money out of it before you take the plunge, even better. But that's not always possible, but yeah.
Yeah, you sign your life away sometimes when you join these big corporates. Yeah.
Know the feeling.
Yeah, I think we both know that. It's yeah, definitely like a Clark Kent Superman type of thing. The other thing, good reason about starting something on the side, it actually really benefited me in my role. I got like it built my brand internally, which was such an unexpected, awesome side effect.
Yeah.
So Warren, any sort of parting advice for listeners on accelerating their career and what else they can find in your book?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, create that, you know, a bit of direction in life and, you know, have those long-term goals of what you're striving for. It really does help with your resilience and all that sort of stuff. That once you know where you're heading, you know, the winds can change, but you can adjust your sails and to still get to where you want to go. And, you know, over the time, your goals might change, but it's also important to look at your bucket lists and things like that and say, well, there's some things that I really want to do. Like if you want to go indoor rock climbing, don't wait until you're 60 to go rock climbing.
Yeah.
Do it now, get onto it now and enjoy life as much as you can through the process. So.
100%. Yeah. It's all about enjoying life. And this is what I think. It's like, don't wait to retire to start enjoying life. Like start, like no days are promised. So it's a good, really good reminder of that. Warren, I'm so impressed that you've got this book out, everything that you're doing, providing amazing advice for people and accelerating their careers. I mean, there's a really great Jim Rohn quote. He says, work harder on yourself than you do on your job. Something I wish I'd heard about 15 years ago. It was all about work and not about enough development, but making up for it now, I think. If listeners want to connect with you, find your book, where can we send them?
You can find me on LinkedIn. That's probably where I hang out the most. So just search for Warren James and you should be able to find me. The book, it will be available through our website. So that's rapidmentoring.com.au and there'll be links to the book there. Being a self-published author, it's, it, it, you know, it is better for me if you buy direct from the author, but it will also be available from Dimmicks and Booktopia and Amazon, all those sorts of places. So,
amazing.
Yeah, and there'll be an ebook and all that sort of stuff, of course. So it's all happening. Very exciting.
So exciting. I'm so glad to be one of the first interviewers to get you to talk about your book. And, yeah, just amazed that you've done that. And thanks for sharing your process on both writing books, resilience, sleep, building careers, getting 34% increases in a performance review with our listeners. It's been great to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been brilliant. Thanks, Liam.
Hey, thanks so much for sticking around. You've reached the end of another episode of the First Time Facilitator podcast. Connect with the show at firsttimefacilitator.com or follow me on Instagram at Leanne Hughes to find out what I'm up to during the week. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it with someone who will also appreciate the insight, and make it easier for yourself and subscribe to the show in your podcast player of choice. Thank you so much for listening, and chat to you next week.